The meadow was lit partly by the harvest moon and partly by light diffusing through the skirts of the great canopy, which, when I turned around to look back on it, looked like an enormous straw-colored moon half sunk into a dark sea. Leo was silhouetted against it. He was moving in an odd, dance-like fashion, which for him was hardly unusual. One end of his bolt was modestly wrapped, but the other was all over the place, flinging out like a bucket of suds, then wafting down for a few moments, only to be snapped back and regathered. The same thing he'd been practicing on the statue of Saint Froga. It was strangely fascinating to watch. I was not his only spectator. A few visitors had gathered around him, bulky men, four of them, all wearing the same color, numbers on their backs. Leo's bolt slapped down on top of number 86 and draped him, making him look like a ghost. The lower part was all in a thrash as he flailed his arms to throw it off. His head was a stationary knob at the top, hence a fine target for the ball of Leo's foot, which was delivered in a perfectly executed flying kick. I started running toward them. 86 went down backwards. Leo's momentum carried him to the same place. He used 86's torso to cushion his landing and rolled off smartly, staying low like a spider and snapping his bolt free. 79 was coming in high. Leo spun clear of the line of attack and in so doing got his bolt around 79's knees. Then he stood up, bringing 79's knees with him. 79's face dove at the ground and he didn't get his arms up, down, fast enough to avoid getting a mouthful of turf. For just a moment after Leo spiraled his bolt loose, 79 remained poised upside down with his legs splayed. Leo absent-mindedly rammed his elbow down into the V as he turned to see who was next. Answer? Number 23, running right at him. Leo turned and ran away, but not very fast. 23 gained on him. It was his fate to step on Leo's bolt, which was dragging behind Leo on the grass. This demolished his gait, which had been clumsy to begin with. Leo sensed it, as how could he not, since the other end of that bolt was lashed around his crotch. He whirled and yanked. 23 somehow remained on his feet, but the price he paid for doing so was that he ended up staggering, bent forward at the waist, leading with his head. Leo stepped into position and used 23's momentum to flip him over his hip. 23 didn't know how to fall. He came down hard on his back. I knew what was coming next. Leo would follow with a death blow to the exposed throat. And that is just what he did. But he pulled it, as he always had with me, and refrained from staving in the man's windpipe. One remained. And I do mean one, for he had a large numeral one on his back. This was the man with his arm in a sling. With his good arm, he had been rummaging through the pockets of the fallen 86. He found what he had been looking for and stood up, holding something that I was pretty sure was a gun. His spine clamp exploded in light, flashing alternately red and blue. He uttered a common profanity. He dropped the gun and collapsed. Every muscle in his body had lost tone in the same instant, jammed by signals from the clamp. All four of the attackers were down now, and the meadow was quiet, except for the plaintive warbling of their gee-jaws. A solitary person somewhere nearby began clapping. I assumed it was a slime who had had too much to drink, but looking toward the sound, I was surprised to see a hooded figure in a bolt. He kept shouting an ancient Orth word that meant, "Hail, huzzah, well done." Stalking toward this fraud, I shouted, "I hope you're stinking drunk, because if not, you're an idiot. He could have gotten killed. And even if you really are that big of a jerk, don't you know there's a couple of inquisitors skulking around?"
"It's okay. One of them skulked out to get away from that idiotic speech," the Fra said.
He pulled back his hood to reveal that he was Varax of the Inquisition. I can't guess what my face looked like, but I can tell you that the sight of it was the most entertaining thing Varax had seen in a long time. He tried not to show it too much.
"It never ceases to amaze me what people think of us and why we're here," he said. "Will you please forget about this? It is nothing."
He looked up at the top of the presidium.
"Larger matters are at stake than whether a young fraud at the remote hermitage of Saint Edhar practices his vlore on some local runagates.
For God's sake, he continued, which sounded funny to me since few of us believed in God, and he didn't seem like one of them. But maybe it was just an oath used by cosmopolitan people in the sorts of places where our consent was thought of as a remote hermitage.
For God's sake, raise your sights. Think bigger. The way you were doing this morning. The way your friend there does when he decides to tackle four larger men.
And with that, Varrax drew his hood back over his head and walked back toward the canopy. He passed the Warden Fendant and the Warden Regulant hurrying the other way. The two of them parted and stood aside to let him pass. Each nodded and uttered some term of respect that no one had ever bothered to teach me. Both of the wardens were looking rather tightly wound. In ordinal time, the boundary between their jurisdictions was clear. It was the top of the wall. During Apert, things became complicated as the wall ceased to exist for 10 days.